Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries. I'd like to welcome to Plain Talk Anthony Noreiko, President and CEO of the Canadian Business Aviation Association, or the CBAA. Welcome, Anthony.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Oh, just super awesome to have you, in the booth. Plain Talk. And we're going to today talk about business aviation and that little pesky COVID-19 thing.
It certainly is pesky.
As a lot of your members work through the financial process implications of COVID-19 while attempting to keep their passengers safe, their flight crews, employees, ground, FBO workers, and then, of course, their companies all healthy. What have you been finding?
Well, it's a great question, and I appreciate the opportunity to sort of unpack that. You know, for us, with respect to business aviation, our mission is really quite simple. The job of any business aviation operation is ultimately to offer safe, reliable, efficient transportation. And that's the same for the airlines. What's unique now with COVID, in the context of COVID, when you think of safety, what's unique now is business aviation, the opportunity, when you talk about touch points, you know, whether it's around the FBO, the idea that there's the lack of a baggage area that one needs to collect and queue at to get the bag. But fundamentally, in terms of safety, one of the primary benefits is that you have the ability to control who you're flying with. Often it's a corporate setting. You've got managers, senior managers, directors, VPs, et cetera, all the way up to including the president and CEO. And he or she then has the ability to say, okay, this is the team, this is why we're going. In the context of COVID, we're very careful to ensure that these are essential flights. These are for commerce and trade. We've certainly seen demand impact on that leisure travel, and that goes with all of the government regulatory affairs, the issues that come up there. And when you talk about reliability, one of the big elements now is, as our commercial counterparts, both the airlines, the airports, as they see the devastating demand, the cliff that has fallen off with respect to COVID and commercial flying, in terms of reliability, what's unique is that business aviation, we've always been able to say, well, you know, look how unique this is. We get to go to these perhaps more remote airports on a frequency and a calendar, on a schedule that fits the clients or the customers or the corporation. So in terms of reliability, what we're exposing now with the airlines dropping off on their schedule is just that you truly can say you can go when you want, where you want. It's a unique element. Last, I bring up is the idea of efficiency. You know, we talk a lot about right-sizing the aircraft. My time leading one of the corporate organizations, an idea that I like to use is that if your idea made sense, both sense in the pocketbook and sense in the brain, when you think of selecting the right aircraft for the mission, you can be very targeted, and as a result, achieve efficiency wins, both in terms of cost and in the environment. So in the context of COVID, it's certainly a unique opportunity that we're experiencing in business aviation. Because of demand drop-off, we are currently flying, but what we face as a ongoing concern is, one, the quarantine measures and the idea of the science behind that, and then two, the state of the industry overall and how rising costs will impact operations. So in a nutshell, that's ultimately the mission of business aviation, that safe, reliable, efficient transportation, and some of the concerns we're facing now around COVID and how that interfaces with our industry.
And do you see corporate passengers, and you listed a long list of folks, do you see that as they look at their budgets historically spent through the airlines and through using unified communication collaboration tools like Zoom, that they'll start realigning their budgets from airlines, fly less, but move their economic spend to charters, other business aviation organizations, spending the same amount of money, but essentially moving it between pools.
Absolutely. And I think this whole COVID is like a giant grand experiment here. You know, we've talked a lot in the past about, you know, what, you know, if you're somebody, a naysayer on business aviation, you would say something to the effect of, well, once we all get sort of online meetings, once that really happens, then all that will shift away. And I think we would all, I can't speak for everybody, but if you spent enough time on Zoom, on Teams, on Google Meets, doing webinars, there's certainly now a drive for when you need to get together with your customers, your clients, your employees. You know, if you need to spend that time together, you're recognizing the value of being together in person. And another element I'd add that kind of goes to your description of how a corporation thinks of travel spend. One of the big elements that, you know, the duty of care obligation. So if I'm a corporation and I've got my folks flying across the country, across the globe, one needs to be concerned with the duty of care and the obligation of the employer to ensure that the travel is safe. And so, you know, there are things the government needs to do. I do see that corporations, what we've experienced to date in COVID is those that had this time machine, this tool, they were able to continue in a new way, but they were able to continue the work that they needed to conduct. And what we're seeing in the industry now is those that had not yet had exposure to the benefits of having this tool, the time machine, we're starting to see from whether it's our charter management companies, our aircraft sales teams, the manufacturers, that there is a renewed interest in understanding how buying this tool can help an organization or an individual as they go about their travel. So I definitely think that there's more to the story. We are all living this experiment, and I think that on balance, this is an opportunity for sustainable growth of business aviation, something that I don't know that without COVID we could have said. I think now more than ever, we are getting to a place where there is a path to sustainable growth in business aviation, really as a result of COVID.
I think, as you pointed out, it's facilitating quality interactions people to people versus the online interactions that perhaps can give you some element of body language, but not really 100%.
Absolutely.
And I really do like, you know, your view to charters creating that time machine element that allows business travelers to fly not only protected, reducing what's arguably, I've heard something like from a airline perspective, 300 plus COVID-19 opportunity touch points to less than 10 within the FBO environment. So protecting and saving time and impacting and protecting personal health.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a great segue to some of the technologies that are now being implemented. As an example, Aviation Clean Air's recent STCs delivered in Canada, Transport Canada, through our friends at Sky Service.
And I think that, you know, what's interesting with a lot of these tools, I mean, I guess the challenge is we live in a world where often people like the black and white. It's this idea of a binary. It's either a yes or a no, a one or a zero. And the way to think of all of these steps that operators are undertaking in order to ensure the safety of their passengers, these steps should be applauded. And there's still a lot of work to go. But when you talk about elements like Aviation Clean Air, when you think of the steps that FBOs have undertaken to secure their facilities, enhanced cleaning schedules, just the The awareness to the requirement that, you know, one, their brand is tied to the image of obviously the quality of the service they can provide, the safety, but it's that element of safety that becomes critical. So what you're seeing is a whole new world of best in class. What's unique about our sector is that often in the case of the corporations and in some of the individual flight operations, you know, the teams that are empowered to lead those flight departments, they are really empowered to look after that. It's a fulsome safety approach, and it leads everything from, you know, the aircraft, the equipment that you've got on board, how you fly the aircraft. And in the context of COVID, is what is the organization doing to think about it? You know, one of the challenges we've experienced in terms of, this isn't just the CBAA, this is all of our counterparts in the aviation association world. When we're talking about the government response and the idea of, let's call it, flattening the curve and mandatory quarantine, what's frustrating to us, of course, is that there has not yet been a willingness by the government to take an effective view of testing to avoid quarantine. Now, why do I bring this up today? I think it's important to share that, you know, in like literally 3 days ago, so we're recording this in mid-September, this is the 17th, you know, the CDC changed its guidance on U.S. passengers with respect to symptom-based screening. And as they call it, as I quote from them, has limited effectiveness because people with COVID have no symptoms or fever at the time of screening, only mild symptoms. Why do I bring this up? Because our operators are still tasked with that essential flying. You know, we're supporting the Canadian economy. We're flying folks on behalf of the corporations they represent to do the business they need to do. And what we need, I think it's still sort of forgotten that in Canada, as an example, we can't travel to the East Coast right now without a 14-day mandatory quarantine. Now, sure, there is federal and provincial jurisdiction, and that's an issue that needs to be tackled. But what we need here is the leadership to say, and we've tried to show alternatives. We created the CBAA flight plan that talks about testing and using daily testing as the engine that gets us back and moving. That is the primary concern. So we need to focus on leading in the cabin, leading with the teams that fly our folks around. But what we also what we require actually is for the government to set the stage that allows both business aviation and our other air partners to succeed. And frankly, I believe that to be testing, and it will translate itself more to beyond just the aviation realm, but to our kids at school, visits at long-term homes. The strategy we have in place today doesn't give people a peace of mind and doesn't allow us to collect more data, all of which allows us to make better and informed decisions. So in a nutshell, that's the issue that we're facing right now.
And I think if we can get to a day when there's a consumer grade medical test kit that allows every Canadian, if they can afford it, or subsidized by the government, to be able to test themselves before they go out, test themselves when they come back home, of course, and apply commercial tools within the FBOs, airports. Do you have a view on, let's say, this mass point-in-time testing to your point? Folks that are asymptomatic will get on the airplane and potentially infect their colleagues and air crew, pilots, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, I believe that, you know, we need to think of this as a first principles problem, which is to say we need to focus on what is right versus who is right. Now, right now, these tools exist today. Abbott Labs has had it. For instance, they've been using it in the White House to do a 15-minute test. You know, the testing is out there. Here is the problem. The problem is, remember that story about the binary world we live in? We like it either as ones and zeros. We like it to be absolutely crystal clear. And people forget that scientific method, that there is a hypothesis, there is experimentation, there are learnings. And what we have now is in front of us the realization that these tools exist. And in current state, the testing model that we have Really, is it because it's ineffective? Because only when you feel the symptoms do you decide, you know what, I think I'm going to go stand in line for who knows how long. I mean, as we are recording now, the media is talking about lines again for COVID tests. So one, you're facing the line. That's almost a turnoff for most people. I mean, if they're concerned that they've got it, they're probably going to stand in line. Then once you conduct the test, you've got to wait for the eventual results. You know, what we know now is that if you are positive, that the days leading up to that test, the days leading up to your decision to actually go, were days that you were transmitting the virus. And so this vicious circle goes round and round as we think about contact tracing. So where we are now, and frankly, I think the government needs to, how they can lead in this is they can say, okay, fine. The PCR nasal swab. So what we do now is that, you know, you see it all in the videos that you typically see that Q-tip basically being inserted into your nose, and it looks kind of painful and all that stuff. That is considered the gold standard. And the problem is that because we don't do enough of that, we don't have a good we don't have a finger on the pulse of how many people are actually infected by COVID. What are the stories that the data could tell us? Like some of the things that come out of Iceland are, how is it that some of the individuals that test positive don't exhibit any of the symptoms? Or if they did, perhaps they don't even recall them. Maybe they had like a seasonal cold. Maybe they felt a little under the weather. But because we don't have that picture just yet, we need to build it. And the way to build it is to say that daily testing will not have the sort of, let's call it, the accuracy of the analysis. In other words, when you compare it against the gold standard, the PCR test, a dipping a paper swab or taking your spit and putting it into a little tube basically and waiting for the color to change, that's not going to be as accurate as the PCR test, but it will be on day two, perhaps day three, maybe even day four. But the way I frame it, when you go back to that first principles thinking, if we made it relatively inexpensive, and the government, as part of its funding initiatives to get Canadians moving, to get people into restaurants and businesses and aircraft, what we should do is say, listen, before you walk in, you take this test. And if you're doing this with enough frequency, you have a better, you can really put your finger on the pulse of who in fact does have COVID and what is in fact the right time to go home. But in the alternative, if you sit back and you say to yourself, well, now, if that's not good enough, meaning if the government says, well, that accuracy of analysis isn't sufficient for this binary world we're living in, that's our problem. We need to change that thinking. We need to say, no, we're going to do these tests. You might not catch it day one or two. But frankly, I would prefer to live in a world where kids at school are tested every single time they walk into the morning. Perhaps it's done at home, and the parents have an effective decision to say either they're, you know, staying home or they're not, or before you go to see your relatives in a long-term home, or before you get into an aircraft. These are the kinds of things that can give Canadians peace of mind. These tools exist today. It's only because we need the government to say, if you will, we give it a blessing to say this is for public use. But it exists today, and we should get there.
And I think the reality, to your point about the spread of the virus, if I have five friends and they have five friends, and I take that model five layers deep, that's an opportunity of potential COVID targets of 3,125 people to get COVID to me. And then, of course, as we all know, it's somewhat highly contagious. Fortunately, if we look at the infection rates versus the worldwide population, things are very low, but you don't want to be in the pool of infected with other health problems. And of course, as we've seen, the death rates then skyrocketing. I kind of think of it a little bit tongue in cheek, if you will, trying to add some levity to a very dire problem, but you know, I don't have the statistics off the top of my head, but let's arguably say worldwide in 2018 there was, you know, 500 billion pieces of luggage sent by the airlines annually, and with a 0.5%, you know, loss rate, do you want to be in that, you know, smaller
loss rate bucket standing at you know, at the luggage counter, watching all the other passengers' luggage slowly being removed until there's none left. It's kind of, you know, how I equate it, if you will, where you go, oh crap, I'm now part of, you know, that small pool of folks who have lost their luggage. Obviously, the consequences of losing your luggage are completely different than contracting COVID-19.
Well, you know what it does, though? It's an interesting example of, to me, I love this line. Robert Cialdini has a fantastic book called Persuasion. And in it, there's a line that I just absolutely love. And it's, you can't change what people think, but you can change the way they think about things. And it's we need to frame responsibly what does risk management look like in the context of, I remember seeing recently a stat that said, you know, for children 10 and under, you know, so for a lot of families, and what will sell and draw eyeballs to the media these days is, of course, the stories that involve young children, because no one wants any ill will to befall them. But the reality of the stats are that a child catching COVID and dying, children 10 and under are three times more likely to get hit by lightning than to actually die from COVID, according to what some of the stats that we're seeing today. And when I said that, you know, we need the data to tell the story, I think you were going in the right direction, which is to say that in time, even the claim I just made, we'll be able to better validate with additional testing. We'll be able to validate if that is in fact a true statement. And it's only through this scientific method, this process of putting it out there, testing, experimenting, learning, innovating, doing all of this and repeating it over and over again until we get to a place where we've evolved our thinking on this, will we get better? But I think in time, you're right. We will come to discover that, you know, the impacts of COVID, I don't think will be, in terms of overall infection rates and death rates directly associated to an individual contracting COVID and unfortunately dying from COVID. I think it remains to be seen how those numbers will settle out. I don't know yet that they are as dire as initially presented. But I think that what we can do is think about our response and thinking on, do we have it today? How do we best provide Canadians a peace of mind so they can go about the business they need to do? Because as we talked about sort of leading up into this call, I think the biggest thing we face, and again, here we are recording this in September, we've planted the seed with respect to thoughts of the second wave. You know, everywhere you look in the media, it's second wave. And we are facing the seasonal cold and the seasonal flu. And my concern is that without adequate testing, without doing anything that says, do I A, have COVID, or if I test negative, well, I must have the cold then. I mean, people's mindsets will shift if they can just kind of give themselves a bit of a relief that says, boy, these symptoms that mirror what COVID provides me are not in fact COVID, and perhaps I can take some benefit in that. But I fear that we are marching inevitably towards a second wave because of those seasonal elements. And I think the tragedy is, because we have zero effective testing, that is going to be the reality. And I think if we get ahead of it, perhaps we can mitigate some of the even greater economic impact, not just within aviation, but across the Canadian economy, if we go into a second wave in the wintertime, where socially distancing outside is not really much of an option in most cases.
And no doubt part of the human experience is peace of mind.
Exactly. I think exactly right.
Part of the human experience is also about our habitual ingrained habits.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And you know, the only thing I'd put a pause on also is the one needs to think carefully about the prospect, one, of a vaccine, that it in fact comes, two, that it comes in sufficient doses that we can inoculate not just citizens of the globe. I think the opportunity still lies in, you know, some of the science around what's been interesting. I've been watching with quite a bit of interest, thinking around vitamin D and the use of that, and literally just looking at some of the scientific journals on why patients who have started a regime, you know, there's a lot to unpack. And if your listeners are thinking about or have an interest in understanding more about it, I would encourage them to look up vitamin D in COVID and look at some of the stories that are out there with respect to how we live as citizens. Often, you know, quite a few of us Canadians are vitamin deficient, and vitamin D deficient, I should say. And it's the impact of that and COVID, those two together, that is interesting to me. So you're right. I think people would probably like, again, this goes to that binary one and zero. People would probably like to say, ah, we got a vaccine, things will be just fine. But I think what we need to look at is, you know, sort of like the flu vaccine every year is our scientists best thinking about seasonally what we're going to experience and then trying to inoculate the population based on that. But of course, outliers happen, events that are outside of our control take place, and new strains come in that we're unprotected for. So I think for us, it's how do you frame testing? How do you view now science that's out there? How do you think and live in that robust scientific method? We have Canadian companies. I know there's forgive me, I can't remember the name right now, but it's based here in Ottawa, that are developing little devices that allow for testing at home. I think that's the next sort of Apple product. I mean, you've got an iPhone, you've got a Samsung device, whatever that is. But I think the next sort of wave of home electronics is a really slick cube that somehow can take saliva and test it in the sky using data that's provided in the cloud about the latest scientific method on it. So I think that's in the end where we need to go, and perhaps we can understand the disease, track it, isolate it, in the hopes that we have two paths. We either have a vaccine that's effective, that'd be fantastic, or if not, that we can live effectively and in a risk management model that understands how do we best live with the reality of this disease, conditions that we're living in.
So looking in the rear, so just to change our conversation just slightly, what's on the horizon at the CBAA?
Well, for us next year, we're actually celebrating 60 years for the association. So that's going to be a notable event. We are hoping, of course, to have it in Toronto with our partner at Sky Service Business Aviation. I hope that in June we can gather responsibly. But for us, you know, what's interesting is I think a compelling new way. And when I think of the association's efforts and how we approach the future, I think one exciting opportunity is, what does that urban air mobility look like? How does the electrification of aircraft look like? How do we continue to celebrate? And we're going to do that later in the month of September, where we celebrate, you know, business aviation and the environment. And I guess, you know, when I go back to the way we need to change the way people think about things, it's important to identify that, you know, business aviation is but a small fraction of global emissions. And the efforts that we are self-selecting to follow, whether it's, you know, we are so active in the promotion of sustainable aviation fuels, we are pushing our government. We believe that Canada could be seen as a leader, both in terms of the production, the utilization of, the creation of sustainable aviation fuel, basically a blend that you could put into the aircraft that requires today no additional certification. You can put it in there, you can fly jet aircraft, and we're being more thoughtful of that. But to me, I think when I go back to that idea of urban air mobility, I think of how our operators, how that urban air fleet will complement what they do today. So perhaps it's, you know, when you're getting from the downtown core out to an airport, to a reliever airport, how do those things fit together, where I've got that electric or that eVTOL aircraft design takes off from a building. I love the concept of specifically Uber and what they're contemplating, what the industry's contemplating about, you know, what does a terminal look like? How do you convert a parking garage in the top two floors into like a really cool terminal that accommodates these new aircraft and integrates them so that the traveling public gets access to it? Because in the end, those tools are basically just smaller versions of what we fly today. We just happen to have jet aircraft that can fly from here to Vancouver or here to Tokyo. Whereas that urban air mobility solution might be able to take you effectively from Toronto to Pearson, Toronto to Muskoka, or, you know, Vancouver down towards Victoria. These are some exciting new opportunities.
Super awesome, Anthony. And again, thank you so much for being part of Plane Talk. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Phil. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at planetalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.